why Krishna's very expert arrangement. I think we're going to finish the chapter with this evening's session. There's two sections here that we have remaining to cover in chapter 13, where Narada Muni makes his appearance in the cast of characters in the chapter, and he gives very nice instructions, particularly to Yudhisthira. Primarily for the benefit of those, both for the benefit of those to bring everything to memory again, for those that attended last weekend's discussions and those that were not here, we give kind of a refresher. Who can recall what we discussed last time? What was the last section? What happened last? The last section of verses. Who were the personalities? What was said? What happened from what was said?
Was returning back and all the. Yudhishthira and a list of all others were welcoming him back into the family because he has come back from a long pilgrimage, and they were talking about the places where which great saintly people visit because of their visit the places of pilgrimage gets purified because of their
there's two verses in this chapter. One of them is coming in this section that we're discussing today. Two verses in this chapter that are often quoted verses out of the whole Bhagavatam. One of them is that one. What's that one verse? What's that one verse that you recall? Prem Bhakti? Saints of your caliber are unto themselves places of pilgrimage. You recall? Anybody recall?
First one for Tirtham, for one to Tirtham.
What's the English? What's the gist of the message? Tirtha, yes, that's the verse. What's the message?
The places of pilgrimage become places of pilgrimage just because of presence of saintly
people. Well, the saintly persons like you are unto yourselves places of pilgrimage, because wherever you go, you sanctify that place, even the places of pilgrimage themselves. That's one of the two verses in this chapter that are Prabhupada often quoted. So Yudhisthira is glorifying Yudhisthira is glorifying Vidura in many ways and asks about the welfare of the Yadu dynasty in Dwaraka. Surely you must have gone to Dwaraka. So tell us about the welfare of the Yadu dynasty members. And he gives the whole synopsis of his experiences without telling them about the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty. And then?
And they wouldn't. And we discussed that saintly people do not want to hurt the feelings of anybody by conveying bad message. They would rather refrain from doing so.
Yeah. Even if it's the truth, they're reluctant to do that. Then? The royal family retires and Dhritarashtra is taken to the side by Vidura, and he delivers his message that he came back from pilgrimage to deliver. What's the message?
He asks him to quit the palace and go to a secluded place.
And what should he do in the secluded place?
Yes, like contemplate on that.
Do something a little different than he was doing in the palace anyways. What's that something else? Anyone?
Has to purify himself.
Purify himself.
He chastises him that he is being in the palace and eating the remnants of what Bhima had left. And he's like a dog. And so he has to leave the palace immediately. That's the message that Vidura delivers. Even though it is very straight, since Dhritarashtra was his brother and Vidura was a renounced person. He's speaking from the platform of a sadhu. So just like how a sadhu would give the message, so he gave him straight. So that Dhritarashtra, as a kshatriya, would definitely get affected and immediately take it seriously and leave the palace instead of getting so detached and attached.
Okay, so Dhritarashtra took it to heart. It actually his heart changed, and he left. So when he left, who was with him?
Gandhari also followed him, and Vidura.
Vidura went with him also.
Take them, even before anyone knew, he took them. And the next morning, Yudhishthira found out that they were not there, and he was lamenting. And similarly,
what was the nature of his lamentation? This is important.
I might have done something wrong. Otherwise, why should Yudhishthira leave?
He was saying that. Yeah, he was saying, I'm an ungrateful personality. Knowing my lack of gratitude, it hurt Dhritarashtra so much that he cared for us in so many ways, like his own sons. And so knowing our lack of gratitude, he just left in disgust. And then?
Sanjay also laments, saying that I haven't left him at any point of time. Why he has left me at this time without even letting me know. So his lamentation was different than that of Yudhishthira.
Yeah. So they're both in this distressed condition and wondering what they should do, why has this happened, what's going on. You know the mood. And while this was happening, presto, Narada Muni appears, and then Yudhishthira Maharaj, being very, very expert in knowing what to do in such circumstances, he offers all respect to Narada and poses his question. He says, you are like the captain of a ship in a great ocean, and you can direct us to our destination. Thus addressed, the godly personality, Devarshi Narada, greatest of philosopher devotees, begins to speak. So this is the breaking point where we left off. This is the third circumstance in one chapter where the principle of sadhu sangha and the effects of sadhu sangha is highlighted. What are the two previous ones? What's the first one in the chapter?
Vidura associates himself with the sadhus of the pilgrimage where he went.
Say it again. Vidura, I heard the first word, the rest of it I lost.
Vidura associates with the sadhus.
Yeah, who? Which sadhu?
Maitreya.
Maitreya. What was the circumstance? How did he associate with Maitreya?
Krishna was preaching to Uddhava and Maitreya was there.
Yeah.
So on the way, Vidura meets Maitreya and Maitreya instructs the same whatever he has.
Because Vidura is on pilgrimage, so he goes to a holy place and he finds Maitreya in that holy place. And he fulfills the real purpose of going to a holy place besides seeing the temples, taking bath in the sacred river, doing a little parikram, visiting here and there. He goes and hears from the Saint Maitreya. What happens when he hears from Maitreya? It's specifically described. What's the result? Asks every single, every question he wants to ask. And he becomes, through that sangha and the hearing and chanting activity, he becomes a perfectly realized soul. Not just learned, but perfectly realized soul. All the conclusions of all the scriptural understandings become accessible to him through that sangha. Then the next one. Obviously, this is the theme of the chapter.
Vidura is giving his association to Dhritarashtra and everyone.
And also the Pandavas and the Yudhisthira. Especially, in this very special way, to Dhritarashtra that takes the spotlight in the chapter. It's the theme of the chapter. And now, once again, another saintly personality. This time it's Narada. So Prabhupada comments in this verse, the purport, there are qualifications of a sadhu. And they're indicated. Narada is the philosopher, the greatest of philosopher devotees. So Prabhupada indicates that in order to become a philosopher devotee, you can't become Narada, but to become the philosopher devotee, one has to hear, just like Maitreya heard from Krishna, and then Uddhava heard from Maitreya, and then Dhritarashtra heard from Uddhava. So one has to hear from such a qualified soul, one who is in that position themselves, and one has to hear very, very attentively, and then one can become a learned philosopher devotee. So there's what Prabhupada says specifically: one has to be faithful. When I was visiting Ann Arbor before coming here, we spent some time, few sessions, just speaking on this point of faith, the role of faith, and how is faith demonstrated? What is it, and how do we develop it, and how do we understand that it's there and manifesting itself? One of the things that's indicated by faithfulness, or where there is faith, is there's submission. There's action upon that which one hears. So in this particular case, Narada heard, of course, from Lord Brahma. He directly instructed him. So he was very, very faithful. And Yudhisthira also is very faithful to Narada. So Narada instructs him, he's hearing him with strong faith. And he also is very learned, but perfectly learned is Narada, so he can't figure this one out, so he's asking Narada. So there are three things mentioned: faithful, learned and renounced. This principle of course Narada is in the renounced order, not exactly sannyasi, but he's fully renounced. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, he's grihastha, but he's also, although king, he exhibits his capacity of renunciation. So these are qualifications, Prabhupada says specifically in the purport, the qualifications of a pure devotee: faithful, learned, and renounced. And because Narada has that quality, he's respected by Yudhisthira Maharaj as the captain of a ship in a great ocean. Of course, we're not so accustomed to traveling by ships, but I get a little sense of that when it's traveling by airplane. If the captain says something, I mean, if the stewardess is, the captain said, fasten your seatbelt. The captain turned the fasten the seatbelt sign. So it means it's like martial law. If the captain says, you do it. The absolute authority, and it needs to be, because if there's any question of security, safety, or getting to your destination, you depend on the captain to get you to the destination. When you're crossing the ocean or flying in the air, it's risky business. You're taking risk, and you have to have a capable person who knows how to get you from this place to that place. And everybody that's on board is expected to be obedient to the captain. That's the rule. And if you're not obedient, you get tossed overboard. The plane, they can't toss you out the plane. But that's, anyway, that's the idea here. So he's accepting him like in this absolute position. Whatever you say, I'm ready to take that instruction so that we can get to our destination. Exactly what he says in the verse. So that speaks about the qualification of the person who is hearing. Must have, to get full benefit from a qualified person like Narada, you have to have submission, great regard, respect, faith, and readiness to do whatever Narada says. And Prabhupada certainly indicates this point about the spiritual master who accepts a disciple. The spiritual master has the responsibility to test and see if that quality of the disciple is there, that the disciple is prepared to do what is indicated by the spiritual master. Another indication he gives in Nectar of Instruction is that the disciple is prepared to renounce material comforts. He specifically describes this, that the way it's narrated in Nectar of Instruction is that Prabhupada says that these American and European boys and girls, they come from very nice families, but they're prepared to forego all comforts and will accept very, very simple accommodation, because that's all that we have to provide them, just so that they can perform devotional service. Of course, it doesn't require residing in a temple ashram situation in order to be prepared to undergo whatever is necessary for performing service. But even in other situations, that the principle is that personal inconvenience is not a problem. When it comes to seeing to a greater cause, the instructions that Krishna gives, or following the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the acharyas in the line, they indicate certain things. So we may accept some inconvenience. That's not a problem, if the greater cause can be fulfilled or the instructions can be fulfilled. So that qualification is there in in Yudhisthira's side. Faithful, learned because he's hearing from Narada, renounced, ready to take any position simply if it enhances the opportunity to serve nicely. So Narada then begins to speak. And this is just where we ended up last time. Just as before we get into this, I'll just going through what Narada's statements are. There are occasions in all of our lives where we have to console persons who have had some horrible thing happen in their life, or a death, or some tragedy, or some traumatic thing to somebody that they know, something like that. I mean, we're in the material world, so those situations arise, and they're very, very nice sections in the Bhagavatam that instruct us that either we can turn to if we're in those situations, or if we're called upon to speak to others. This is one of these practical application kind of considerations. That so what Narada is about to say to Yudhisthira Maharaj is very, we should pay close attention to it, so that when the situation arises in our life to deal with difficulties or help others deal with their difficulties, we'll have a very clear transcendental picture. So the very first point that Narada makes is it's stated very strongly, but it's lifting, it's dismissing the material conception and lifting Yudhisthira to the transcendental conception about the soul and about the Supreme Soul. So here's what he says. O pious king, do not lament for anyone, for everyone is under the control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all living beings and their leaders carry on worship to be well protected. It is he only who brings them together and disperses them. So one thing I thought was very interesting in what Narada says is that people and their leaders worship the Supreme Lord so that they will be well protected. Now, our thought about devotional service, because we're instructed, we're very, very fortunate to be instructed by Lord Chaitanya and the followers of Lord Chaitanya, particularly Rupa Goswami. And following the line of Rupa Goswami, we're taught from the very, very beginning that the approach to the Supreme Personality of Godhead should be cultivated without any material expectation. Anyabhi lasha to shunyam jnana karma dinavritam. Just for pleasing Krishna, loving Krishna, serving Krishna favorably, not for some fruitive gain or for gaining some empiric understanding of reality or of life. Just so to please Krishna. If we do like that, automatically the sense of being protected is there. We discussed this in Ann Arbor also. There are six components, or six parts to surrender. They're discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya instructs them to Sanatana Goswami. And one of them is, one of the parts of surrender to Krishna is a sense of being protected, because it's one of the things that we have to, in order to function, we have to feel a sense of protection. After all, there's so many things. This material world is a dangerous place. We could probably spend several hours just telling about horrible things that happen to people because it's a dangerous place. This thing, that thing, the other thing. I heard one from Sham just the other day, just yesterday on the way to your home. Somebody, something happened right outside the temple. I remember I was visiting in in Madison, University of Wisconsin. This was some time ago. But a devotee that used to live in Gita Nagari, that I knew from Gita Nagari, was attending the program, and she was there with her son, teenage son, 13, 14 years old. We're talking about this type of thing, and she just piped right up and said, you know, people may think that big cities like Chicago, New York, you know, Washington, whatever, they're really heavy crime places, but right here in Madison, Wisconsin, you know, it's the capital of the city, or capital of the state, but right here in the university area, right where we live, just the other day there was a shootout in the school parking lot. And apparently with some issue over drugs, and one guy this and the other guy that, and there was a shootout. And said, and that's the same route that my son travels to come home every day. Because walks from the school down the pathway through the parking lot to the sidewalk to get. Fortunately, he didn't happen to be there when the shootout happened. But you know, it's not just big heavy duty places, or in the suburbs. It's nice. It never happens. It happens. It happens. So there's danger everywhere, and what to do. Send your kids to school in bulletproof vests or something, maybe. Demand a school has a metal detector. Still. Somebody was telling me this one. I forget who the somebody was. One of the things that kids do is they hide razor blades under their tongue, or on their tongue or something. Maybe tape it to their tongue so it doesn't get detected as they go through the metal detector, and then they have a razor blade inside the classroom. For this wasn't New York, this was someplace, this was life. So one of the, knowing that this is a dangerous place, but the Supreme Lord protects his devotee, persons may take shelter of the Supreme Lord for protection. So of course those who are on the path of pure devotion understand that protection will be there for one who becomes the Lord's devotee. Maybe we talked about this a little last night. We still take precautions and do things wisely, but we know ultimately those precautions and doing things wisely ultimately isn't going to protect me. I'll do those things as part of my service to Krishna, but ultimately it's Krishna who's my protector. And Krishna is also the question why he brings this up is because he's concerned. Yudhisthira Maharaj is concerned about his uncle, and will he be protected? Is he safe? So Narada is saying, you're not the protector. Supreme Lord is the protector. And if you have some ability to protect, please understand it's come from his ability that he's given to you to protect. But you're not the protector. The Supreme Lord is the protector. Then the very next thing he says is, also he brings things together and disperses them. This is a very similar thing that was said by Vidura. It's not, the circumstance is different, but the principle is the same. The Supreme Lord is the controller, and he brings things together and disperses things. So I'm going to read a little bit from the purport. Prabhupada's language is just delightful. Where Prabhupada is describing the benefit that one has in associating with a sadhu. Essentially what he's saying is that karma can be changed by sadhu sangha. One can be so much in anxiety about, oh, this difficult, this, that difficult situation, and be preoccupied with dealing with it. But it, that person would say, I don't have time to take association with sadhu, because I'm too busy dealing with this problem. And so many problems. But the message here is that through sadhu sangha, that can be completely changed. And the force of time can also be completely changed. He's illustrating the situation of Dhritarashtra's life. How is Dhritarashtra's life going? Every single hope that he had was being defeated. He had this benediction that he would have 100 sons, but his 100 sons died. He wanted to be king, but he couldn't be king because he was blind. Then he wanted his son to be king, and his son couldn't be king. Hello. Bad karma. But, so if the rest of his life continued in the same direction, it would have been just a very, a total dismal failure of a life. But by the association of Vidura, that completely changed the direction of his life. It became, at least at the end, favorable and very auspicious. Prabhupada writes, ordinarily one cannot change the course of one's due happiness and distress by planning it so. Everyone has to accept them as they come under the subtle arrangement of kala, or invincible time. Says it again. There is no use trying to counteract them. The best thing is, therefore, that one should endeavor to achieve salvation. And this prerogative is given only to man because of his developed condition of mental activities and intelligence. And then specifically, mankind can do that by the grace of sadhu. So that the real platform of intelligence is to recognize our limitations. And with those limitations, the need to call upon some greater or superior power than ourselves. Just on this point of fate, persons sometimes think that things are in our lives are fated, destined, the whole idea of destiny, that karma leaves us. And I've had very long discussions with people that just can't get over the fact that it seems like if karma is there, then if practically speaking we're helpless, like helpless morons. There's really nothing that we can do. We just have our karma and it's just going to happen that way and that's it. And it's not fair. That's partly what they have to say. And certainly karma is a very, it's an irrevocable force that we can't do anything about by our own effort. But Prabhupada explained that if one can read one's fate by palmistry, and then one can go to kirtan and clap one's hand before the deity, and then the lines on one's hand can change. The idea is that by the activities of devotion, what might have happened, like what might have happened to Dhritarashtra, had he not been intercepted in his trajectory of life by Vidura, it would have been one thing. But because of that association, his destination was something else altogether. So by the good fortune of saintly association and the activities encouraged by that saintly association, kala and karma can change. And listen to how Prabhupada completes this paragraph. Only for man are there different Vedic instructions for attainment of salvation during the human form of existence. One who misuses this opportunity of advanced intelligence is verily condemned and put into different types of miseries, either in this present life or in the future. That is the way the Supreme controls everyone. So he's the statement made by Narada is that the Supreme Lord brings people together and disperses them. So here he's saying, Prabhupada is saying, this is how the Supreme Lord controls everyone. There's the option of fruitive activity. And the option of fruitive activity is one gets bound up very tightly, one's intelligence becomes condemned, different miseries one is placed in, and then another body after that and go through the same thing again. So one can declare, there is no God, or God is dead, or I don't believe. Just saw a billboard. Was it on our way going back and forth to Ann Arbor? Billboard that said, it was cute. It said, I do not question your individual existence, signed God. Meaning that the human being may question, does God exist? Reply from God, I don't question your existence. Billboard, all totally black background and white letters. I do not question your personal existence. So, there may be persons who question the personal existence of God, and in that questioning of the existence of God, defy following his authority. So, such persons who defy the authority of God, they're controlled by him while they're declaring the denial of his existence. They're controlled by him. And then there's another stage of control that's mentioned in the next verse, and that's those who recognize, yep, there is a design in creation, there's a supreme controller, I'm obliged to follow the indication of scripture. This metaphor is used in a number of places in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes it says the bull, and here in this case it says the cow. A cow bound through the nose by a long rope is conditioned. So also human beings are bound by different Vedic injunctions and are conditioned to obey the orders of the Supreme. So we can accept our conditioning by denying God's existence, or we can accept our conditioning by accepting God's existence, and accepting God's existence that we live according to the codes that God gives. And it's likened to a rope through the nose of the cow. So the rope through the nose, it's a very tender part of the animal. I remember reading this in Vrindavan. It may even have been we were covering this chapter in the Vrindavan Institute. And I was then every morning I was going for morning walks and seeing, you know, in Vrindavan they have their donkeys that are carrying big loads, and they have the bullock carts with these giant animals. But a little thing through their nose, and the little guy sitting little tiny guy sitting on the little platform, and he pulls this way and the animal goes that way, and he pulls that way. This big giant animal. The big giant animal could turn around and say, you cut it out, leave me alone, Buster. I'll kick you one. And it'll hurt. So leave me alone. He doesn't do that. He gets this thing through his nose, and little to the left, he goes left. Pull back, he stops. One of those, and he goes forward. Plus a little swat in the back with a stick. So, as the animal is controlled that way, humans are also controlled, and the word that's used is conditioned. And it's that's actually a preferred kind of conditioning, being conditioned by the mode of goodness, the quality of accepting the indication of scripture. But that has its limitations also. You're studying Madhurya Kadambini, right? Most of you, many of you. In the chapter of Anartha Nivritti, did you get that far yet?
Yeah.
Yes? Anartha Nivritti. So in the Anartha Nivritti chapter of Madhurya Kadambini, there are four causes or sources of anarthas. One is past sinful activities, the other is past pious activities, another is mistakes made in devotion, and the fourth is offenses to the holy name. So in the category of anarthas that arise from one's past pious activities, that's a curious one. Did you discuss it? Okay. So past pious activities, I just got just yesterday, haven't had a chance to reply to it, but an email from one person whose name I won't mention, but a nice young PhD student, who says basically, I mean, he wasn't saying that my anarthas arise from that category, but that's what he was saying. He said, here's my background. It has, you know, my family this and the upbringing that and piety, piety, piety. And my wife also, and gee, everything's fine. So who needs to surrender to God? Everything is fine. I mean, we can do things. We'll go now and then to a temple, and we'll now and then read Bhagavad. You know, we'll do things in a pious way. But surrender, you know, with a life focus of surrender to the personality of Godhead, everything's fine. So it's an impediment to taking full shelter. Or what Queen Kunti says is, the fruits of piety in the form of good birth, janma, or aishwarya, opulence, or shruta, good education, shribhir, beauty, these things that come from one's past pious activities, the tendency is to become the enjoyer of those things. And aid yamana manak puman, she says that it makes people mad. Mada. It makes people mad. And it certainly prevents them, she says, from calling out feelingly, and that was what this particular person was saying, feeling dependent on the personality of Godhead. I don't know. Everything's okay. So it's an impediment, that those nice things. Somewhere else I was just coming across this, just as another reference. I can't recall the reference, but the message was, without the context of the story, the message was that as long as one has material conception, one will have material desires. That is, if I think that I'm something other than spirit soul, if I'm this body of such and such designation, then my hopes for happiness will also be in terms of that body and the designation of body. Whatever it is. It can be a monkey, it can be a human, it can be a Brahmin, it can be a Shudra, could be a Vaishya. My hopes for happiness will be I'll make money. And because I have that particular covering, and I think that's who I am, and so that's my happiness, is somehow I'm just driven to make money, or as a Brahmin, to learn and to study and to develop knowledge. So my happiness expectations are in terms of my bodily conception. So what is the Bhagavatam is teaching in this particular place that I can't remember the reference, is that as long as that material conception of life is there, one cannot feel oneself dependent on the personality of Godhead. And that's what Yudhisthira Maharaj, that's what Narada is doing with Yudhisthira Maharaj. He's kicking away his sense of, through your very, very powerful Kshatriya skills, Yudhisthira, you're thinking, you can protect Uncle Dhritarashtra and Aunt Gandhari. You can't do that. The Supreme Court can do that. And if he decides he wants them to go somewhere, you're not going to stop it. So give up your idea that you're the doer, you're the controller, you're the enjoyer and the manipulator of your past piety. Rather, you should, in giving up that position, take the right position. You're the servant of the Supreme Lord in a particular capacity. You did the right thing for a period of time. Now the Lord has another plan, and just accept that other plan, because there's nothing you're going to do to stop it anyways. It's going to happen. The plan of the Supreme Lord will happen. Anyways, so there's no harm in making some plan how we're going to conduct a particular activity. But we always have to be surrendered to the Supreme Lord's plan if it starts going in another direction. We certainly need to protect religious principles while moving along with the Lord's plan. But if the Lord has his plan, we have no choice. Here in this verse, the statement is being made that we become this much we know. We were obliged to follow religious principle, or we were obliged to live by theistic conduct. That much, so that the ring is in our nose, and we say, we put it there actually. No one else can do that. We say, yes, fix the ring in the nose, go right ahead. I'll live my life by religious principle. At least that much. Here's again some of Prabhupada's wonderful language. Laws of the Supreme are generally known as the codes of religion under different conditions. But the principle of religion everywhere is one and the same. Namely, to obey the orders of the Supreme God, the codes of religion. That is the condition of material existence. All life, by their own selection, all living beings, in the material world have taken up the risk of conditioned life by their own selection. And thus they are entrapped by the laws of material nature. The only way to get out of the entanglement is to agree to obey the Supreme. Isn't that what we were talking about last night in the Bhakti Viksha class? It's the position of spiritual life, or the position of being engaged in yoga, is to withdraw the mind from this independent idea of enjoyment through sense gratification, pull on the brakes, horses, and redirect the mind and the activities of the senses towards activities of transcendence, or following the indications of the Supreme Lord. In the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the indication is following the direction of Supersoul, the dictates of Supersoul from within. But those dictates of Supersoul, they're also confirmed in Scripture. They're confirmed by the spiritual master and saintly persons. So we just abide by that. And just recapping our discussions yesterday, by living our life in that way, we are assured that we'll reach Krishna's abode, we'll come into Krishna's direct association face to face personally in course of time. So that's what Narada is saying to Yudhisthira. Stop this business of lamenting in the bodily conception that you're the doer, you're the controller, you're the protector, you're the one who brings things together and keeps them from becoming dispersed. Give up that controllership mentality. That's Krishna's position. Your position is the servant position. And you're bound by religious principles, like every one of the rest of us. And be happy being under the order of the Supreme. Now, one of the things that Prabhupada is writing about also in this purport, people will ask this, I don't know how often these college educated people in the West ask this question: where did scripture come from? And their idea, what's behind that question, is that it's man-made and therefore it's fallible and therefore we can take it or leave it. Is behind the question, where does the scripture come from? So Prabhupada says something very interesting in this regard. Just mention it. The codes of religion, scriptural injunctions, are made by liberal representatives of God in consideration of different conditions of living. Now he's speaking about, in contrast to man-made laws, there's God-given law, dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat pranitam. But even how those God-given commands are to be administered, it takes a liberated person to understand how they're to be administered. Therefore, for all of us who aren't yet in the liberated position, we're obliged, that's what he's telling Yudhisthira, we're obliged to follow those indications. But mind you, those indications aren't whimsically created by some legislative body somewhere at the state capital or the nation's capital or the planet's capital or the universal capital. They're not made by fallible people. The application is coming from liberated souls, not influenced by the modes of nature, not favoring their particular weaknesses or their likings, but in a perfectly administered way. So, at least the followers of spiritual life have to have that faith. Such instructions aren't just for conventional, conveniently put together because it just makes life nicer. People have that idea. I've heard that a lot. That then, how can one faithfully follow? How can one be yes, a careful adherent of religious principle? You can't. But by, so it's coming from liberated souls, and the further faith is by carrying out the orders of the Lord, the conditioned living being gradually becomes free from the clutches of material existence. So this means that faith that one places becomes realized. This is your question yesterday evening. I may be a quite conditioned soul, but if I have, through some fundamental faith, through the process of hearing, something awakens, some spark of recognition, realization awakens, but I'm still a conditioned soul, I'm going through life just by faithfully adhering to those instructions as best as I can muster my strength to do so. Gradually, the purification will take place in consciousness, where spiritual consciousness becomes more illumined and stronger. And the clutches of material existence slackens. I become free from that conditioning. Gradually, progressively. And experiencing that enhances my faith in these principles, and with that quality of enhanced faith and deeper realization, altogether my position is more fixed and strong. And in little steps like that, gradually, spiritual life unfolds. So that's what he's indicating to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Then he talks a little bit about how Krishna acts upon living beings and matter. He gives this example, text 43, as a player sets up and disperses his playthings according to his own sweet will, so the supreme will of the Lord brings men together and separates them. Now Prabhupada comments, this doesn't mean that Narada is saying that Krishna's whimsical, like a child has a bunch of toys and then they bring the toys together like this and all of a sudden just knock them over and walks away. But Krishna's not capricious, some willy-nilly personality. Rather, it's to say that the emphasis is he's not bound by any rules. He makes the rules. There's one of the atheistic philosophies in the world since time immemorial goes by the name, the Sanskrit name is Karma Mimamsa. And that atheistic philosophy says, even if there's God or not God, it really doesn't matter. It's a useless question to try to refute the existence of God or to establish the existence of God, because it doesn't even matter. Because if there is God, then those laws of karma are the laws which bind him, and so he's obliged to give the reward of good action or to punish the behavior of bad action. Karma's on top, God's somewhere under the order of karma, and the living entities are subject to this thing of the controller God. But above controller God is karma, if there is God. And if there isn't God, then it doesn't matter, then his karma goes directly to the living entity. Therefore, the argument goes, just do good works. And it's not so neatly packaged in society today, but that's what's coming down. Especially in academic world and in the modern intellectual world. I looked at an article, I saw an article about Dalai Lama in Time Magazine or US News, something like that. So I read it. And he's written an essay about being in exile from Tibet. Did I describe this to this group yet? No. Okay, so it's just a highlight on this particular part. He's saying the same thing. He's describing when he was a young man, young boy, how he received a book written by Karl Marx, and he read it, and he thought, this is very interesting. One of the things that he found was very interesting was the idea of a classless society. And that fits very nicely with Buddhism. Rather than seeing this one's high and that one's low, seeing everyone with a kind of equal vision, he liked that. Then another thing he liked that Karl Marx wrote was in the course of living one's life rightly, not depending in this kind of lame, weak thing of depending upon some god or deity to do so. He liked that idea too. Very explicit. Atheistic moralism. No god in the picture, I like that. Everyone's equal, I like that. So he actually became an advocate of communism, he describes. He liked those components. And when he was did he pass through Chicago, Dalai Lama?
Yes.
When he came to New York, he gave an address in Central Park. And there were many thousands of people. I made the opportunity to read what the New York Times had to say about it. It was some of the same kind of stuff. It wasn't as explicit as, no God, I like the idea of no God. But it was more indirect, that values, tolerance, and, you know, ethics with no mention of God, no mention of the soul, nothing about something that's eternal, just ethics, principles, good principles to live by, something you could open up a fortune cookie and read, and that's, you know, something like that. So it's not, it's another, it's a different, it's not karma mimamsa, but it's another godless notion. And very explicitly, Bhagavatam is indicating God-centered conduct. And he's specifically here, Narada is, the hammer is hitting on the center of the head of the nail, boom, that the recognition of the personality of Godhead must be there, Maharaj Yudhisthira, otherwise unnecessarily, although you're a very ideal religious man, you'll be caught in the condition of lamentation, which Dalai Lama went on to describe how, when he realized the actual nature of how communism was being exhibited, it wasn't, he wasn't, he changed his mind about liking it. So it goes with the world of trying to bring about change, just like Prema was commenting that this conference that she attended about problems in school, and I read something else. They're sending these highly paid guys around to teach how you can detect the symptoms of violence in your children or in the classroom. There's this symptom, 20 different symptoms, and you know, so that the message is prevention is the key. But you know, they're not getting, it's just blowing on the boil. The infection is still there. The infection of godlessness is there. And because godlessness is there, people are not satisfied. And when people are not satisfied, it comes out. They're angry. Or they're disturbed. And it comes out. In some form of behavior, speech, or something. And it's not nice. So just monitor it. See, you know, check and make sure you find out at an early age, this person's angry. This doesn't solve the problem. Keep guns away from them because this person shows a sign of anger. And seeming good anyway. The idea is in God-centeredness is required, and making that strong connection with God is required, and having saintly persons like Narada around to reintroduce that even in lives of great personalities like Maharaj Yudhisthira is required. What to speak of ourselves? So here's how Prabhupada expresses it. Generally, the law of karma is that one is awarded the result of one's own actions. But in special cases, by the will of the Lord, such resultant actions are changed also. But this change can be effected by the will of the Lord only and no other. Therefore, the example of the player cited in this verse is quite appropriate, for the supreme will is absolutely free to do whatever he likes, and because he is all perfect, there is no mistake in any of his actions or reactions. And then he says, these changes, so the changes in karma, is of resultant actions, are especially rendered by the Lord when a pure devotee is involved. This means persons, and I'm sure we can think of persons here and there and elsewhere, who karmically have there's something that they're struggling with. You know, some struggles are greater, some struggles are lesser, some are physical, some are mental, some are financial, some are social, some are this and some are that. Everyone's got some struggle. That can all change. That's the Bhagavatam's message. That's why the sages of Naimisharanya wanted to come together and hold this big 1,000-year yajna, and they decided that the purpose was to change the course of Kali Yuga, or at least to curtail its rampant influence at the beginning of Kali Yuga by making auspiciousness manifest to counteract that. So this hearing of the message of Bhagavatam is what they finally concluded. That's what's going to make the difference. And to make the Bhagavatam manifest, they needed the speaker of the Bhagavatam. They needed the sadhu. The idea for each of us, the practical application part, is that we are supposed to become those very same personalities, the karma-changing agents of the Supreme Lord, like your Madhurya Kadambini is teaching. How can bhakti begin in the lives of others? It's Madhyama Adhikaris. That's what we're supposed to be becoming. Madhyama Adhikaris. In the intermediate stages of developing our devotional service, not necessarily in the Uttama stage, at least not in an immediate thing, but exhibiting the qualities of those who are being compassionate. Talked a little bit about that compassion last night. Just accepting other persons on whatever level they are, because that's the level they are, and acknowledging that, and then helping them to take one more step towards the position of devotion to the Supreme, whatever little bit of step that may be. I'll try to complete this section quickly. There's several verses and time is rolling. I'll read the verses and then just summarize. We're going to go from text 44 to text 50. So Narada continues to speak. O King, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, and he gives four different philosophies of life, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, take your pick. Take your favorite ideology. And still you shouldn't lament. Feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. Four. Give up your anxiety due to ignorance. So here are key phrases to help somebody who is in a difficult situation, or they know of, anyway, they're caught up in some calamity of life. Give up your anxiety due to ignorance of the self. You are now thinking of how they, who are helpless, poor creatures, will exist without you, Yudhisthira Maharaj. The gross material body, made of five elements, is already under the control of eternal time, kala, and karma, action, and the modes of nature, guna. How then can it, being already in the jaws of the serpent, protect others? So you're bound, how can you unbind another person who's bound? First make yourself unbound, Yudhisthira Maharaj. And that position is attained by the thing that he's advocating, the whole message of this chapter, taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depending upon him. Now, depending upon him doesn't mean do nothing, sit in a rocking chair and wait for spiritual world to descend on you. We engage in very active forms of devotional service, but with full dependence upon Krishna. Anyway, in this case, because your uncle has gone, your aunt has gone, that's the arrangement of the Supreme Lord, just accept it. Oh, that makes wonderful comments. Those who are devoid of hands. Now, this is the other verse. that's quoted again and again by Prabhupada that's coming from this chapter. Ahastani sahastanam. And it ends jivo jivasya jivanam. That phrase, jivo jivasya jivanam, means that one living entity is food for another living entity, and that's the arrangement. That's interesting why he's putting that. That you might think, oh, it means that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, they become food for someone. That's not what he's saying. But he's the translation, ahastani ahastanam, ahastani sahastanam, those living entities without, with hands, without hands, are food for living entities with hands. Those that have legs are, those devoid of legs are prey for those who are four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. This is sounds a little bit like Darwinian survival of the fittest. The strong dominate over the weak. And that's God's arrangement. So Narada, this is one point where Narada and Darwin agree with one another. The reason that Narada is bringing this in is that it's another argument for persuading Yudhisthira Maharaj just to accept the arrangements of the Supreme Lord. You can't change that which the Supreme Lord creates. There's Chatur Varnam Vayashristam. There are four categories, four varnas, four conditions of occupation. They're created by Krishna. It's not going to become different by seeing a classless society. Prabhupada met with Professor Katosky in Moscow and said, "My dear professor, I see even here in Moscow, and under the name of communism, I see different classes in society. In the morning when I go for my walk, I see that the early hours, the workers, the administrators in the Kremlin, they're being driven in their limousine in the back seat in this big long car. They're the working class, they're the Vaishyas, it exists. You say classless society. But it's created by the Supreme Lord, so it exists. There are similarly, evam parampara praptam, Krishna's created a system of parampara. Somebody might come along and say, no, that's, it used to be like that, but now it's going to be something else. There's some things that just don't change because Krishna has created them. And so the system of the Supreme Lord making decisions or through agencies bringing people into the world and bringing them together and bringing them apart, Krishna will do that. That control is in his hands. It's just not going to change. Therefore, King, you should look to the Supreme Lord only, who is one without a second, and who manifests himself by different energies and is both within and without. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is the guise of all devouring time, and has now descended on earth to eliminate the envious from the world. That's the end of our section. Prabhupada comments that this causal form, so Krishna is acting through the agency of kala, events in this material world, past, present, and future. Time is required. You don't have events. So by the agency of time, so some hours ago we were at different locations. Through passage of time, here we are together, and a little more time we're going to be dispersed going somewhere else. So time, Krishna is the agent, or Krishna is the, through the agency of Krishna's time energy, we're brought together, and that's his prerogative. Of course, we're participants in the whole event. We could not come here, we could have been somewhere else. But through the agency of time, past, present, and future, things are happening this way. And this is the message he's giving. We should look to Krishna, rely on Krishna, and in that dependence upon him, we should understand everyone that we will be protected, those who are taking that shelter, because this means Dhritarashtra, he's also protected, don't worry. Far more protected than if he's thinking himself independent. He's in good hands. Okay, so we're nearly finished with the chapter. We'll conclude that this afternoon or evening. Any discussion? Questions on? Yeah.
Dhritarashtra being in the position of a king, he might have had other opportunities to come across with saintly personalities during his life. So what was that special thing that was different from in the state of Vidura appearing there at a certain time of his life, and he immediately took to that and he left. He might have had other opportunities to meet saintly personalities.
Well, this is one of those things that so let's say in our lives we may have had the opportunity to meet saintly personalities that just didn't fructify in a life of devotion. But it's not that that went in vain. Some opportunity to associate with a saintly person didn't go in vain, but rather it's another small step towards Krishna, another deposit in our spiritual bank account, another unknowingly performed beneficial activity. So it's worked in the case of Dhritarashtra. We went over that. Those other things that helped make him ready to hear what Vidura had to say, those other opportunities of association were there in his background. And then, but finally when Vidura came to say, it was at the right time, by the right person, in the right circumstance. There's so many examples of this, but I'm sure we all have our stories to tell of somebody who received a book. Just was hearing this from somebody recently. They received a book 10 years previously, and they just put it on their shelf. Bhagavad Gita went on their shelf. Then this and that and that and the other thing happened in their life, and then they thought, I'm not figuring things out very well. Maybe I should turn to books of wisdom. And they pulled the Bhagavad Gita off the shelf. and began reading Bhagavad Gita. And so 10 years later it had some effect. That same meeting, same book. So circumstances are like that. Sometimes persons are more receptive or less receptive at a point in time. This is a nice thing to remember for preachers, and that is when people are at a crossroads in their life, it's at a time when they reevaluate, you know, very, very fundamental assumptions that otherwise they don't evaluate. They just kind of mindlessly go on in their life with whatever it is, just, you know, kind of at a dum-dum program, just keep going. Like a donkey, just keep walking on the path without thinking, where am I going, just walking on the path. So when those situations of life arise, it's a very good opportunity. It's nice for devotees to say, for just a preaching principle, it's nice to maintain proper relationships with individuals in any case. When those proper relationships are there, some trust, some confidence is established. Then when you see in someone's life, you know, something happens that just uproots the whole business, whatever it might be, job, family, work, health, something, then all the things that one just doesn't ordinarily consider, it brings about some fundamental question. What's going on here? They're searching for ultimate answers. Why? What is the purpose of life? Why do these things happen? What is one to do, and so on. Prabhupada comments when Prajapati Daksha became so upset the second time around, Narada sent the Shubhalaspas and the Hariyashvas off to become sannyasis. And Daksha just got so disturbed that he cursed Narada. You've misguided my sons because they haven't had the opportunity to go to pass through family life and learn what that's all about. You've directed them directly, first straight away, to go to the path of renunciation. So you've been very unkind to them. So I curse you because of that wrong action. I curse you. You can't stay in any place for more than five days or 5 minutes or something like that. And Prabhupada comments that one thing is that Narada just accepted. Very nice. Thank you. And then the next thing he comments is that he stayed because he knew this is a good opportunity to preach, because everything is now topsy-turvy. You know, all of Daksha's expectations didn't match reality. Something else happened. So now this is all in a change situation. So I should stay. It's a good opportunity. Taking that as a instruction for preaching Krishna consciousness. I know that one of the things that they did in Houston to help develop their congregation when it was a very, very small congregation is the temple president, and it could have been anyone, a congregation member or a couple of people, they looked in the obituary column in the paper, and when they saw that some Indian family had some death in their family, they immediately stopped everything that they were doing, and they attended their priestly duties of going to that family, consoling them, doing whatever that was needed to help them make the transition and adjustment, and speaking these messages very clearly and, you know, helping them in that moment of difficulty. And the families became so grateful that this out of nowhere help came, sent by Krishna, that they started inquiring more, whereas if they had just gone to visit them in any old circumstance, same response was not so likely. maybe, but not as likely. Interesting.
The distressful situation in which the Dhritarashtra was in was also not the cause.
Distressful like, situation what?
Dhritarashtra was losing all his son, his kingdom.
Yeah.
That could also be a cause.
Sure.
The
particular part of Dhritarashtra's thing was he wasn't even realizing it. He was so attached. He wasn't even thinking properly. But when he started thinking, Savitura was making him realize. Look at this. And look at this, and look at this, and look at this. You should be distressed. You're so attached, you're not even thinking like that. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.